All right, well, without further ado, it now gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for tonight, Phil from Santa Maria. Let's give him a hand, all right?
My name is Philip, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
and I'm full of a lot of emotions tonight. It's always intense when I pull into Lompoc, you know? It's like I hit a bottom that I never knew I could hit, and I lost the obsession to drink, which I never knew could happen. And so both those things are pretty heavy, you know, so it's always a huge homecoming. See all your familiar faces. And so I intentionally don't prepare a lot for things like this because I get in my head and then I want to start figuring out ways that I can sound cool. You know what I mean? I don't want to put bells and whistles and tassels on everything. And I want to not be honest, you know, and I've learned that that's the language that's spoken here is honesty. You know what I'm saying? It's like in these rooms, we get to be each other's medicine and take part in each other's healing and growth, you know? And I had the privilege of going out east to Kentucky. My father turned 80, and I flew out there with my kids. And so my sister had a lot of these photos laid out, and so there was one of them that really caught my eye. And so I'm going to pass this around. This is not an award or anything for anybody. I'm going to pass this around, and I'm just going to point out, like, this man right here is my grandfather, and this little boy on his knee is my father, right? And so I'm just going to kind of start with that.
Please let that make it back to me. Nobody pocket that.
And there's something interesting, though, because my grandfather shares an important date with me, right? And it's my birth date. And so literally I was born 1974, August the 20th. That same day, my grandfather chose to take his life. And so so just to kind of set the stage, you know what I mean, of me coming into planet Earth here. And so I was brought into this environment of a man that just lost his father and just had a son. You know, and I was the youngest. I had a speech impediment. I was the runt. I was born to a father that did not know how to grieve. And so a lot of that pain and anger and confusion and everything, and this isn't just according to me, this is according to my siblings, it was aimed at me. And so my first emotional memories were walking on eggshells and always being tense and never knowing when the other shoe's gonna drop, you know, or when I'm gonna get whipped with a belt or belittled or ridiculed or mocked. And so those were my first emotional memories, you know, and so as a child, I was like, I would act out. I was extremely violent. My sister would even say that, like, I would just become a different person, you know, when I got angry. And so I had this affection towards the Incredible Hulk. You know what I mean? Like, out of all the superheroes, it was the Incredible Hulk, because there was something that I could relate to with that, because he had this guy that was mild mannered, soft and sweet and intelligent, but when something happened, he'd just lose it. And I could totally 100% relate to that. But being in that, it got me in a lot of trouble, you know. So growing up, I was a boy that hated my father, and some of you probably had this experience, but I hated my father, and it was always perplexing to me because I so badly want his validity and approval, and I couldn't get it. I could not get it, you know. And so I found myself elsewhere. You know, I was raised in a neighborhood. They bought an old house in a neighborhood and rebuilt it. And the majority of the kids that I grew up with were poor, working class, or black. And so at my dinner table, I heard winner, loser, and white trash, and the N-word on a regular basis. You know, and these were my friends. You know, so, you know, and then with my brother, I hated my brother because my brother got the approval that I didn't get. And so early on, I didn't feel like I was part and parcel of my family. So, you know, I had the natural reflex to go outward to find that and to associate with people that were going to accept me, you know. And I remember as a kid, and with this, I just kind of want to illustrate the alcoholic, right? Because this is the disease, right? Is feeling separate, not feeling part of, not feeling good enough. You know, this is the alcoholic. And I remember, it was early 80s, And so there's this dude roller skating down the street at night. This black dude, and he had Jerry Curl in his hair and a boombox, and he was loving it, right? And my dad was standing next to me, and I was probably like 7 years old, and he was like, "Son, that man's high on dope." You know, and that was like my earliest memory of like, you know, comparing my insides to this guy's outsides, zooming down the street, and I was just like, I don't know what dope is, but I want that. You know what I mean? If that is the result of that, then I want that. You know what I'm saying though? And I just kind of put that, I just buried that back, you know? And so, you know, coming into middle school, I started to get figuring out what that was. You know what I mean? And in the neighborhood that I grew up in, started realizing that there are places that you could get that, you know? And so there's this little time before crack when white kids were allowed in the ghetto, you know what I mean? And I was in that time period, you know what I mean? Like I was allowed there and I was welcome there and I could get things, you know? And I realized I could get things and then I could distribute them to other people because for a little boy that didn't feel like wanted, it felt really good to be needed. And that's what it gave me. You know what I'm saying though? It gave me an avenue to be needed. And I'm sorry, but drugs are a huge part of my story because that was one of my countless vain attempts to not drink. Because I found out when I drank, that was my first run-in with the law, was at 13 years old, drinking. You know, so it was like, what else can I do to not do that? And that's what I did, you know? Growing up and trying to figure out where to fit in, you know, there were different groups, there, you know, from skateboarding to punk rock to hip hop. And then eventually I discovered Grateful Dead, you know, and I went to my first Grateful Dead show and I was sold. I was sold on it. It was just like, you know, beautiful women, lots of really good drugs and alcohol and a lot of veggie burritos. You know what I'm saying though? And I was like, I have found my people. So I devoted my life to that. You know, it was like that. And then eventually like Brotherhood of Light, Rainbow Gatherings. And I was like, this is the light. I was, you know what I mean? Like, this was my family. Because to have a group of people that called you brother, that warm embraces, that hugged me and welcomed me. And there was a code, you know what I mean? Like I remember like people going to jail and then gathering bail money for that person. And because it was this rule of like nobody left behind. You know, and it's like, and so I had this kind of wonderland thing in my head, like somehow that this thing is going to progress and I'm going to end up like in this, like this, I guess, hippie wonderland somewhere. You know what I'm saying, though? And then, but gradually the reality started kicking in of like people started dying. You know what I mean? Lives were ruined, you know, and it's things weren't panning out. And so I guess like around 1995, like our fearless leader died of heroin, you know, go figure. Right. And so I was trying to find ways because I knew that I couldn't live this lifestyle. But what was hard about it? And it's interesting because to me, like my first encounters with a power greater than myself were through drug experiences. You know what I mean? My first real encounter with what I called family was through drug experiences. And so it was hard for me to separate those things. You know, it was like because I knew that like that drinking was killing me. Right? And but I couldn't unplug from that. You know, like and these were the type of people if I left something on the table and I left the room and I came back, it would be there. Always. You know what I mean? Like honesty was the code. And but it's like I said, as time progressed, it was a huge paradox. I was like, if this is heaven, then where's this hell coming from? You know, and so I can look back now and realize that, like, when they go through all the countless vain attempts to not use, you know what I mean, going to a spiritual retreat, reading self-help books, and so that's what I was doing. I've read tons of self-help books, like Be Here Now by Ram Dass. It's like, I'm like, you know, scratch visiting the temple in Moundsville, West Virginia. I'm just going to move there. You know what I mean? And so I was doing these things. Or move to organic farms and do sweat lodges, you know? And then eventually, like I moved out to a commune in Northern California, and that's where I met my ex-wife, and so I was there. But the thing was is that any time that I was out from underneath the umbrella of any of these things, I would start using again. It was just like that obsession in me was waiting, was just laying in wait, And just literally, like as soon as I would scamper off from people, I'm in Golden Gate Park, you know, doing my thing. And that's just, I couldn't get away from the monster that lived in me. Like, there's nothing that I could do. And so, let's see where we're going to go with this. So I got married, you know, another one of my countless vain attempts, you know what I mean? And to be honest with you, like, in hindsight, it's like I married this woman, and I realize it now is because I didn't know how to live out here. You know, like if I was to leave this commune, I don't know how to do this. This normal, like, I used to watch people go to work, like 9-to-5 jobs, and I'm like, how do they do it? You know what I'm saying, though? Like, how do they get up in the morning and go over here and do this thing and then come back? Like, none of it made sense to me. And so I left there with her, and actually I went to a Bible college, you know, and I was loaded the entire time, you know, and that's the thing is, like, throughout my life, I've learned to be really sneaky and a really good liar and a really good thief, you know, and those are huge parts of my story. You know, like, I've gone into therapists and fooled them. You know what I'm saying, though? And it's like, and so, you know, I made stabs at recovery. And I remember, like, in my 20s, people were like, Philip, we're getting clean, man. We're getting sober. You should come with us. And in my head, I'm thinking, no, because whatever happens to you guys in there, when you come back out here, you go twice as hard. You know what I mean? And I'm just trying to keep it at a level here to where I can survive. You know, and I kind of felt like you guys found some kind of solace in some kind of low grade theology, and at the most that was cute. But I will say deep down, though, and Mickey sat in here and said it one night. Mickey, rest in peace. She was a beautiful woman, you know, and she spoke my heart. She was just like, you know, like, she's like, the reality is that. Deep down, I felt like God made all these beautiful people, and I wasn't one of them. You know what I mean? And so what I would do is I would prop up a bunch of false pride and spit out, like, I could spit, like, a really mean spiritual game. I mean, people would even take notes. You know what I'm saying, though? And I would even have friends come and move to where I was. You know, and I worked over this with my last set of steps with my sponsor. There were these men that came to me for refuge and for answers, and all I did was partook in their madness, you know? And the majority of those guys are not living today, you know? And that's huge, and I never forget them. I wake up every morning, and I remember those guys, you know what I mean? And it's at this point, it's not something that puts me in this state of depression or just suspend it in a state of grief. It just makes me want to do the same more. You know what I mean? Because I have answers that they don't have. I have answers that my grandfather didn't have. You know? And so, getting married, and then it's like, oh, this isn't really working out. And then we made geographic changes. You know, he'll quit when we move here. And so we move back out east, and it's like, oh, he'll quit when we make a baby. You know what I mean? And I'm fully believing this thing myself. You know what I mean? And it just didn't happen. You know? Well, let's make another baby. You know what I mean? Or let's get a dog. I remember that one. You know what I'm saying? Like getting a dog is going to help this situation, you know? And all that did was, you know, gave me a way to, like, walk the dog away from the house. You know what I mean? And do what I got to do out there and then come back with the dog, you know, like 5 hours later. And I was just telling, you know, Melissa the other night, and it's huge for me to come to this, but, like, you know, I used to think that I wasn't so abusive to my wife because I didn't put hands on her. You know what I mean? But the thing is that, man, I installed a lot of PTSD in that woman. You know what I mean? Of just, like, of the toxicity of living with me, of, like, the holes in the wall or CD cases smashed against the wall. And I could say, well, it wasn't about you, it wasn't at you. But to be in the presence of that, or not knowing if her husband's coming home, you know what I mean? Or if all the tires on the car are going to have air in them by the time I make it back. You know what I'm saying, though? Like, just to put somebody through that stress when they're pregnant with my son, you know what I mean? Or when they're at home with my little daughter, you know what I'm saying, though? And for my kids to be in that. And so, divorce, imagine that, you know what I mean? And I blew that marriage, dude. I took this beautiful woman that was just like, Philip, like, I hope to God that I die before you do because I wouldn't be able to handle it if you died. To literally just telling me, like, I wish you would die. You know, and meant it. And literally meant it. You know, and so a divorce happened. You know, and it got brutal. And it got ugly. At one point, I had them for several nights a week. And then that became like every weekend. And then to every other weekend. And then she pulled out of here with the kids. And it was an ugly court case, you know. I mean, everything got brought up. My parents present in the courtroom, from sex life to everything, you know what I mean? Infidelity, everything got brought up, you know? And so she moved out here. And honestly, it was a real blessing for all parties involved, because the thing was is that, like, I've spent my whole life, like, hovering so close to hitting bottom, you know? But having, like, all these really cool, like, enablers around me, you know what I'm saying? And then we would just continuously enable each other for 20-something years, 30 years, just enabled each other. And so then coming out here, and people were just different. If you left something on the table, it's not gonna be there when you get back. It's gonna be gone, you know what I mean? And things ran dirty out here, you know? I couldn't sell anything out here because you gotta be put on. You know what I mean? Like I actually had to pay for things. And so to come out here and land in Lompoc, I decided to move to Lompoc rather than Santa Maria because I didn't want to be in the same town as my ex-wife, you know. And I landed, came here, and immediately got a DUI. Like it wasn't even a month, you know. And I was going to be working on Vandenberg Air Force Base and lost security clearance because of that. And so I ended up taking a phone job over here, working a scam, you know. I'm not going to say the name of the company, and then eventually stopped doing that. And just being really, really, really alone, grieving the town that I invested myself in for over 10 years, had my babies there, and it's like, and just being stuck in a room that I was renting, and a deep level of loneliness and depression that I just didn't know was possible. And so I became heavily, heavily addicted to a substance that accelerates everything. You know, and totally accelerates everything. And in hindsight, it's one of the better things that's happened to me. I can honestly say that, because what happened was, you know, well, I can't say it's a good thing, but I had three guys jump me over here on the bike path, hit me in the head with a brick, stomped my head, left me for dead, and then I had a protective custody order put against me, you know, and right about the time that I had a large sum of money put in my lap, And so I couldn't see my kids, and at that point there was just no reason for me to be fit for human consumption. You know, it was just on and cracking, and I experienced addiction like I never knew it. You know, I experienced alcoholism like I never knew it, and it's just like you know, those countless vain attempts weren't working anymore. There were no more countless vain attempts left, and so I remember like because it's one thing when I was young to choose to be homeless and reject society and everything, right? It's a whole other thing, man, when like society's like, we're like, no, you can't live here. You're homeless. And once you cross that homeless line out here, people aren't letting you back in. It could be somebody that you're hanging out with two nights before, and they're like, no, we're busy. It's like, you're doing the same thing you were last night before, you know? And so literally, like, I lived on the streets out here for about 2 years, a little over 2 years, you know, 2-3 years. And lived like an animal, like a complete animal. And I just remember like the experience of like thinking about my kids and it hurting me so bad, and there was so much shame and guilt wrapped around that I just it would make me go harder. You know, I mean, to try to get rid of that and try to numb that, and just kind of just running in circles and running in circles and running in circles with that. And on a weird level, it's like part of me, like, there was almost like this little point of relief that was happening, because it was like the other shoe has finally dropped. You know what I'm saying, though? And there's going to be some level of relief coming at some point, whether it be I die or something miraculous happens. You know what I'm saying, though? And that's where I realized that, like, the God of my understanding has allowed me to go into some really dark and ugly places, right, to show me just how wretched of a creature that I'm capable of being, right? And not that I would find my identity in that, But in that turn, that I would turn to that which is beautiful, pure, whole, and lovely, and in the process be transformed. I know that to be recovery. Right? Is that anybody can lose the obsession? That anybody can recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Thank you for that, Dan. You know? And so to come in here, and to come into detox, Julie was there, you know, and it was just like, I felt like I was ready and ripe for this, you know. And I remember I left from here, went over to Santa Maria to get clean because things were just getting literally physically dangerous for me here, you know, like physically dangerous. And because there's some ways that I had acted out on some people. And this is kind of how it is. If you go really hard and heavy on somebody with a weapon, then when people are going to come at you, they're going to come at you twice as hard, you know. And so I had to get out of here. There was a guy that actually gave me some bus money that had a tattoo shop here. And I got out of here. And I went over to Santa Maria and I checked into the riverbed. That was my first thing, you know what I mean? Like, where's the riverbed? And they're like, over there. And I'm like, okay, you know what I mean? And they're like, but there's a lot of politics down there. And I'm like, okay, you know what I mean? And so what I did is there was a guy there that I house set. It was basically his little hut made out of cardboard and pylons and tarps and duct tape. So I house sat for him because he had to go to the hospital. You know, he's like, can you watch my stuff? Yeah, I'll watch your stuff, you know. And it was crazy because I kept thinking, like, I'm going to go get clean. And then, like, it was just crazy how it happened. Like, a week would pass, a month would pass, you know, and I would keep saying, I'm going to do this. But the straw that broke the camel's back was that he had this little radio in there. And I didn't even know it worked. Finally, I turned it on one night. And it was this interview with Miriam Ali, which is Muhammad Ali's daughter, you know what I mean? And I was listening to that. And it was just like, and just hear the power in that woman. And like, and I've always been a fan of Muhammad Ali. He's like from where my family's from. And just to hear her talk about her father and the things that he instilled in her, you know? And I'm thinking like, this is insane. Like to think that like my great grandmother and grandparents, they were sharecroppers, you know what I mean? They, like with 13 kids and they used to work their fingers to the bone and stuff. So that I could live like subpar to Haiti. You know what I'm saying though? I mean, I was living worse than people do in Haiti. And so I'm like, I'm gonna do it. And so I made that trip to the shelter over in Santa Maria. And I remember getting in this little cot, and how comfortable that cot felt, and what's called the overflow, you know what I mean? And I was like, this is luxurious, you know what I mean? It's like some old, you know, polyester blanket, and I laid there, and I remember like pulling the cover up over my head, and I cried, you know what I mean? Because it was like that where that gratitude level is so high that anything's comfortable, you know what I'm saying? And that's where I was at, and I just laid in that. And then eventually, and I made the decision on August the 20th that I'm gonna get clean, you know. And so I didn't get clean then, but I started an outpatient, and I just couldn't do it, you know. Anybody that can get sober in a shelter, like, hats off. You know, I mean, if you can get sober in a shelter, you can do it in Vietnam, because I just couldn't do it. There's just too much going on in there, you know what I mean? I was in a town that wasn't mine, and then, you know, they would be like, okay, you got to leave at this time, and I'd be turned out to a town that's not mine and a park that's not mine, you know what I mean? And so I would just immediately go and do what I do, you know what I'm saying? And completely unable to break that cycle. But I remember, I finally came to this point, and come to find out, these are the magic phrases that, like, unlock it, is that I don't know how to do this and I can't do this, and will you help me? You know what I'm saying though? And it's like, damn, like, for whatever reason, it was so hard for me to say those things before. You know what I'm saying though? Because I don't know, like, I felt like that would be exposing way too much, you know what I'm saying, to the world around me. But I finally said that. And I remember one of the counselors, she was teary-eyed, you know, and one of them was like, well, hey, man, let's get you into detox. Thanks, Frank. But I remember I was just like, well, where do you want to go? And I was like, any place but Lompoc. And it's like, well, there's one open in Lompoc. You know what I'm saying? So I came over here, you know. And once again, if you can get sober in Lompoc, you can get sober anywhere, you know. And so I came over here. And so I entered into detox. And so for anybody that, like, I have a little over 4 years, but anybody that's like 3 days, 6 days, 9 days, 30, 60, 90 days, hats off to you, because those were the hardest days of my life. You know what I mean? Like 1 year is easier than 30. And it gets easier. It gets better. You know what I mean? Just hang in there. It does get better. You know? And I quickly realized that putting down alcohol did not make me sober. You know? It did not, like, because that's where I've been at my whole life, and I've come to realize now that I've worked the steps right, and I've lost the obsession, that any other time that I wasn't drinking or I wasn't using drugs or anything, and then I started again, that I don't, for me personally, I don't consider that a relapse, because I never lost the obsession. I was just taking a break. You know, that's all I was doing. You know, I didn't feel good. I didn't feel comfortable in my skin. You know, I didn't feel like a human, you know, and it's like, and so, so I did what was suggested, you know, and that's one thing that's great about this group is like, people will walk up to you and be like, do you have a sponsor, you know, or what step are you working on? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, wow, okay, maybe I should get a sponsor, you know, so then these people will quit asking me this, you know, so I got a sponsor, you know, and I started working steps. You know, and I remember, like, right before I did that, I was sitting in a chair where this guy is over here. That used to be Julie's chair. That was your chair over there. And everybody let me know that when I sat there. They're like, you're in Julie's chair. I'm like, I really don't care. You know, but I remember when I was sitting and looking at these steps right here, and I realized that, like, oh my God, like, this is a path, right, that fits the template of who and what I am as an alcoholic. You know what I'm saying, though? And this thing that's been my biggest impediment towards freedom and living a spiritual life, right, when it comes to recovery, is made of use. It's not useless. You know what I mean? It's like the Native Americans, when they kill an animal, they use every part of it. You know what I'm saying? That this thing called alcoholism, you know, that, you know, to think my whole life I've been trying to find like a spiritual bypass, you know what I mean, or a way around it. You know what I'm saying, though? And like, if I can just get around this thing and then I can start living my life, you know, either that or like I wanted to do all these different things so that I could continue to do what I was doing. You know, and like, and I've come to love Carl Jung a lot, and Bill Wilson did too, you know, but there's a quote by him that says that one does not become enlightened by imagining pillars of light, but by making the darkness known, you know, and there's another one, I'm probably going to misquote it, right, but it's like, it's something along the lines of, until we make the conscious, right, that we will keep repeating the same mistakes and calling it fate. And so getting into these steps, and it was like, well, I had the opportunity to like see what I was doing, you know, and getting into like, okay, oh, this resentment here, it's like, oh, I did something. So, okay, maybe I can do something different. And everything's just started making sense. Like, if I can make all these little micro decisions that lead to catastrophes, then I stand the chance of making all these little good decisions that's going to lead towards something better. You know, and then seeing what I'm fully capable of when I'm confused, when I'm hurt, when I'm in ignorance and pain. You know, and so a lot of the forgiveness started happening in me just in that 4 and that 5. And I remember finishing that 4 and that 5, and I had a night pass, you know, to come from detox over to here to a stag meeting. And I was scared at first, you know what I'm saying? And I walked here, and it's like, and I went to the stag meeting. It's like, whoa, nothing happened. And then I remember I was walking home, and I was like, something's different here, man. Like, something changed, because a lot of this chaos was cooled off in here, and I wasn't scouring the pavement. You know what I mean? Because that's what I did for years, man. Like, especially out here homeless, I'd scour the pavement for a come up. You know what I mean? Some way, some shape or form. You know what I'm saying? Though, I'm going to get loaded. And I wasn't doing that. That gimme, want wasn't rolling around in there. You know what I'm saying, though? And it's like the moon was the moon, and the air on my skin was the air on my skin. You know what I mean? And it was like, whoa, this is different. And I wept. You know what I mean? And that's when I realized that, like this, something's happening here, you know? And so I want more of that. You know what I mean? And so, you know, I can hear people talking and you know, using big kid words and stuff. But like when that experience sets in and something begins to transform, then it's like, I'm 10 toes down. I'm hands and feet into this, you know? And so I carried on. And so, how much time we got? Is that clock even right? Oh, wow. So yeah, like I was one of these people that I remember leaving detox, and the beautiful thing about that, because I was so scared to leave detox, and the beautiful thing is you guys were here for me. It was just like that, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's in the book, Ray. You know what I mean? He showed me things that aren't in the book. Go figure. You know, and I remember coming over here and having my first commitment. And so I would come over here, and he'd show me how to sweep. And so I would sweep and mop, and I'd even fold the toilet paper in the little V shape in the bathroom that Julie loved so much. You know? And so I was committed to that. And that was on Saturdays. And then another commitment that I had, because the thing is that I felt like I got, like I was shown myself and what excuse my language, but the little attention whore I had been throughout my entire life, you know what I mean? And so there were things that I felt like my higher power handed down to me of like, do this way. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay. You know what I'm saying? And so I had this commitment at this church over here, and people are allowed to take showers and everything else, and they go in there. And so what I would do is I would wash dishes. I'd go in the back door. You know what I mean? I'd wash dishes. I'm like, nope, don't be one of those guys out there with the gloves on, handing out the tater tots. You know what I mean? Like getting the glory. Like just go in the back door and then leap out the back door. You know? And I would walk over here. And so I lost like that, like 30 plus pounds I gained in detox, like in no time, just walking around Lompoc, you know? And so I remember like, and later on it was like, okay, it's time to get a job. But I want to scoot into the pandemic, and it was a really beautiful thing that it happened when it did in my recovery, because I remember like I got out of there and out of detox, I did a 6-month outpatient, you know what I mean? Because like I said, I know myself, I know what a good liar I am, you know what I mean? I know what a good thief I am, and I know how sneaky I can be, right? And so I was like, I want to be held accountable. So I did a 6-month outpatient after the 90 days. And then within that, I probably went to 4 or 5 meetings a day. So, you know, where finally the guy at the house was like, you don't need a card anymore. Just get away from me. You know what I mean? Like, and then I stayed in sober living so long that it was like, dude, you're going to have to leave sometime. You know what I mean? Like, I was one of those people that had to, like, you know, push out. But the timing was perfect, man, and that's the whole thing. It's like just learning to get myself out of my way, and allow something else to live in me. And that was one of my mantras. And I'm not a Christian, you know, nothing against Christianity, but like there were just things that I gleaned, and something that would roll around in my head would be just more of you and less of me, and I would just roll that around my head. You know what I'm saying? And I figure out why they make those little coins out of aluminum so they don't rust. You know what I mean? Because I used to clench that thing. You know what I'm saying? Because like, there's not an area in this town that I did not get high, loaded, or drunk in. You know? And so this idea of like, okay, I'm going to walk across town. And so my first job was at Applebee's, you know, and I would walk across town. You know what I'm saying? And I would run into people, and I remember people would be like, wow, it's been a minute since I've seen you. What, it's been like a month? You know, because it's the same day out there. It's just the same day out there. It never changes. You know, it's the same grind every day. And it'd be like, nah, man, it's been about 6 months. And then eventually it's like, nah, man, it's been about a year. You know, and time started stacking. And I remember, like, I really thought I had it going on at 10 months. You know what I mean? You know, I've gained sanity or whatever, and I had a birthday. And so I'm like, yeah, Mom, I forgot what it was. Like, I'm 46. And she's like, or no, 47. And she's like, no, son, you're 46. Like, I didn't know how old I was at 10 months. Right? You know what I mean? But I really thought I had it going on, you know? So I had this job at Applebee's, and I was like, I'm going to be the best damn dishwasher they've ever had. And I remember the worker, they were like, we're closing again. And I remember the lady coming out like, are you mad at me? And I was like, no, I'm cool. And that's when I realized that, like, I didn't have the fear of financial insecurity. You know? And I remember hearing people, you know, I used to get pissed off and people would be like, I don't have the fear of financial. Yeah, because you got a 401k. You know what I mean? You're retired. You're set. You know what I'm saying, though? And, like, so I didn't know what that experience was like. You know what I mean? And I just remember looking at her like, no, you're fine. We're good. And then back in my head, I'm like, well, you know, nope, nobody's, like, throwing down with me right now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, for the things that I've been through and I'm seeing, like, this is small fries, you know? And I remember coming back and being sitting in here and having Casey Amick, and she was like, man, we have a job for you. I think this job would be perfect for you. And it was just seamless because I had wanted to work in treatment and I wanted to continue on like that. And so I had the opportunity to move over to Santa Maria. And there's a house for mental health diversion, and asked to manage that house, and then I've had the privilege of working at the stabilization center. You know, I have shifts over there now, and so, you know, I get to be present for people, and in no way, shape, or form do I look at, like, working in treatment is recovery. I've seen a lot of people make that mistake. You know what I'm saying, though, and it just get one, you know, be overwhelmed with empathy fatigue. And just be back out, you know, because that's the thing here. It's like, I learn just as much from people that stay in as people that go out. I do, you know, and that's one thing that the whole pandemic thing showed me, you know, was that there were a lot of people that had some time on them that they couldn't go to meetings. So they went back out, you know, and it's like, and so where I went with that was like, how can I internalize this program? And so what the pandemic did for me is that recovery was no longer this place that I went to over on B Street, right? Or over at the little red house. I guess that's D Street? It's easy to remember, huh? It wasn't that anymore. You know, it was like, and that little vellum that lied between, oh, here's recovery and here's your life, like it dissipated. You know what I'm saying, though? And to where it's like, this is my life. You know, and I remember being in sober living and having guys that would even kind of poke at me or making fun at me because, you know, they wanted to get crappy illegal cars and Air Force Ones. You know what I'm saying, though? and all these things. And, like, I'm just like, I've watched that movie too many times, you know? And it's like, so I'm like, I don't want to do that. And I remember, like, getting, I got a little money in my pocket and I went and got some new clothes. And I was so afraid to wear new clothes because I didn't want to distract me from what was happening on inside of me, you know? And it's like, but I remember it's like sitting down with like a new outfit on and I was sitting in a room by myself I cried. Once again, I cried. I love to cry. Like, anybody that knows me, like, I love to cry as much as laugh. It comes from the same muscle, you know? And I just sat there and I realized that, like the clothing that I had on, none of it had ever been permeated with that sweat and that grime and that filth. You know what I mean? That comes from this disease. You know what I'm saying, though? Like when I sweat now, I sweat pure now. You know what I mean? Doesn't have any of that in it. And so, so being over in moving over to Santa Maria, which is once again a scary thing, right? Because that means okay, I got to unplug. What's it like a 20-minute drive or something? You know what I'm saying? Though it's like I used to hitchhike across the United States, but I'm like I'm leaving Lompoc. You know what I mean? Like, but I get over there, and so I'm in this house by myself. There was no clients there, and the first time I've ever been in alone, probably like in, I don't know how long. First actual bath that I had in like 3 years. You know what I mean? And all these things are huge things, man. Like stuff that I used to totally take for granted. You know what I'm saying? And like that's one of the reasons why I say that. Like I'm so thankful that my low was as low as it was, right? Because now it's like life matters. It really matters. Like I don't have to wake up in the morning like, what's my motivation? You know what I'm saying though? Like I know what my motivation is. And I know at first when I came in, it was that I don't want to die. Simple. I just don't want to die. You know what I'm saying? And then eventually, like, okay, it was the fear of being in that kept me in, right? And now it's much more of this place of, like, it's the love of being in that outweighs that fear of going out, you know? And if I can, like, maintain, like, this kind of, like, this kind of beautiful space that I call life, right? Then it's like, to remain sober is inevitable. You know, and so I had the privilege of, like, this August of going out to Kentucky with my kids. You know what I mean? And it was a house that I was born and raised in. My parents have owned it for over 50 years. It was a yard that I learned to walk in. You know what I mean? And, like, and I wasn't haunted. I wasn't haunted. You know what I mean? By all the craziness and all the hurt and all the pain. You know what I mean? My father turned 80. And there were about 180 people there. And so I was asked to speak. And so I was able to stand there with complete sincerity and say that I'm thankful to be his son. You know? Like, he was a little boy on his father's knee. You know what I mean? And my grandfather was one of us. You know? And he was raised in that. You know? And so, and to see my kids with him and him actually being nice and sweet to my kids. Like, when did that, what happened there? You know what I'm saying though? And it's like, and not be jealous about that. You know what I mean? Because before I would have been like, oh, you son of a bitch. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you've shat on my emotions my whole life. What do you know? But to see that, and for both parties, for my kids and my dad, to be able to have that, you know what I'm saying? And like I said, for me not to be haunted, you know what I mean? Like by the ghost of my grandfather. You know what I'm saying though? And it's just like, and so I feel like I know that man, you know, even though I've never known him. You know what I'm saying? Because I know what that pain's like. You know what I'm saying though? And it's like, and it's a blessing that I have answers today that he didn't have. You know, and that I can honestly say that, like, I've lost the obsession. You know, just recently I was sitting with the guy that I was sponsoring and I asked him, I was like, what's one thing, you know, that you hear in recovery that you don't believe? And he's like, that you can lose the obsession. You know what I'm saying though? I just didn't know that was possible. Didn't know it's possible for a guy like me. You know? I thought at the most you guys probably had a bad weekend. You know? And it's like, and so I'm thankful to be here, you know, and it's like and the beautiful thing is like in these rooms we get to be history's detergent. You know what I'm saying? Like and find a level of freedom, and it's like, and I'm careful whose ears this falls on, especially family members and stuff, but it makes it all worth it. It makes it all worth it, you know, and I never would have thought that, you know, coming into a room of alcoholics, that it could be like this. You know what I'm saying? It just did not make sense to me. Did not make sense to me, you know, and, or like Julie would say that I took steps that I didn't believe, and I've got results that I can't deny. I'm feeling an alcoholic.
All right, let's give Phil another hand, huh?